Well, let us continue in our worship to God by having our Bibles open to the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes. And we'll be considering Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 1 through 7. I'll go ahead and read the passage in its entirety to begin the lesson. Guard your steps as you go to the house of God, and draw near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools. For they do not know they are doing evil. Do not be hasty in word or impulsive in thought to bring up a matter in the presence of God. For God is in heaven, and you are on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For the dream comes through much effort, and the voice of a fool through many words. When you make a vow to God, do not be late in paying it, for he takes no delight in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. Do not let your speech cause you to sin, and do not say in the presence of the messenger of God that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry on account of your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For in many dreams and in many words there is emptiness. Rather, fear God. So I'm going to take the writer's advice and keep my words relatively few today, both in what I say and what I do up on the screen. That's something that Brian, by the way, has been trying to get me to do for a long time. He says my slides are always so cluttered. I always have too many words on them, too much information. So, how do you like that? So he begins the text by saying, guard your steps as you go to the house of God. I think it's really valuable to think about guarding your steps as you go to the house of God. No, we're not entering a temple here as we worship at Monte Vista. This building is not special or any more special than any other place that we might find to worship God. So I believe what he's talking about, both in an old and a new covenant context, is as you go to worship God, wherever the house of God is, wherever the place of worship is, wherever you're going to be in the presence of God, in that mode of life, you need to come with some respect, all the respect that you can muster. Guard your steps and draw near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools. Now, I know that there can be a lot of distracting things. We have a lot of things that keep us occupied. The children who sit on our laps, for example, keep us very busy throughout a worship service. I don't believe that's what he's talking about here. He's not saying that you're a fool if you get distracted during your worship. What he's saying is when you come to worship, when you approach worship, when you're going up to the steps to the house of God, and you've not even prepared your mind at all, you're not even entering the place of worship with a mode of worship or a way of thinking. If you're just here to fill a spot in a pew, if you're just here to fulfill some obligation that you feel, maybe an obligation to your parents who would just die if they found out that you weren't a Christian anymore. Or maybe some obligation to the elders because you'd hate to get one of those letters from the elders asking you why you haven't been here lately. So maybe you just come because you know it'd be worse for you to not come. And I think that's what he's talking about here. When you go to the house of God to worship, you are going to the house of God to worship. That is why you're here. That is why you come. Don't offer the sacrifice of fools, because the sacrifice of fools, they don't even know that they're being foolish. They don't even know that they're doing evil. They come and they fill a spot. They sit for a few hours, if they can even manage that, and they don't even realize that instead of worshiping God, they've become proclaimers of evil. They've become proclaimers of evil. Draw near to listen. What good advice. Sometimes it is just better to listen. We often think that intelligence or wisdom is based on how much we say. But according to this verse, just like in Proverbs 9 and verse 9, a wise man is one who chooses to listen and learn, not just one who always does all the talking. And we don't know everything. I don't know everything. You don't know everything. And admitting our shortcomings is much more mature than covering up our faults with empty or vain words. In a lot of words, after all, you're bound to make some mistakes. You're bound to say some things wrong. And speaking of words, he goes on to say in the next verse here in verse 2, do not be hasty in word or impulsive in thought to bring up a matter in the presence of God. Something to keep in mind here when it comes to God. God's not interested in the latest gossip. God's not interested in hearing about just things going on in the news. God doesn't care about Donald Trump's Twitter feed. God doesn't care what you thought about last night's episode of your favorite TV show. We need to be really careful that when we come to God with something to say, something real, something meaningful to say. And don't be hasty in thought. Don't be impulsive in thought. Don't just say things just to say things. Now, Jesus said the same thing. In his Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gave us a model of prayer that we can follow. He gave us the essentials, the building blocks of a good prayer. And right before he gave us that model, one of the things that he said was, watch out for the Pharisees and the way that they pray. The kind of praying that they do is one that's filled with flowery language. And they say a lot of things, and they think that in an abundance of words, that somehow or another they're going to communicate with God what they really want Him to know. Watch out for vain repetition. Watch out for praying just to look good for other people. And I know that can be difficult. Maybe it's just a word of practical application. When you're called upon to lead a public prayer before class or in a worship service, or even if you're leading a prayer at the dinner table at home, I understand that we're leading that prayer for the sake of other people. But at the end of all of it, whether there's 100 people in the room or 200 or 2, you're still praying to God. Whether you're leading others in prayer in a public way or praying in private in your closet, you're still praying to God. And that has to be foremost on your mind. So be careful with the kinds of words that you use. Don't be hasty in word or impulsive in thought to bring up a matter in the presence of God. And he gives us a reason for that. You are on the earth and God is in heaven. Do you think there's anything you can tell him from the news that he doesn't already know? Is there some gossip you can tell him that he's not already aware of? I mean, really, when it boils down to it, an omnipotent God and an omniscient God and an omnipresent God, one who is all places at all times, knows all things, and has the power to do all things, he already knew what happened on your favorite episode of your favorite TV show. He already knows that. Not that he cares, but he already knows. There's nothing you can bring up before God that he doesn't already know. So when you are talking to a God who already knows everything that you're already going to say and everything that's happened to you that day, pick your words wisely. Pick your words wisely. There's an old saying, by the way, about presidents. Somebody said one time that the most valuable commodity on planet Earth is a president's time. And I don't disagree with that, at least in a certain sense. And if that is true in any way of a human being over a human government of a country on planet Earth, how much more valuable is God's time? How much more valuable is it when we go to God in prayer to know what we're going to say and to not be impulsive in the things that we bring up? God is in heaven and we are on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few. Now, I don't believe that Solomon is literally saying to only say a few things to God, or that you need to go out of your way to limit what you say, to keep a word count or something like that. We've already mentioned Twitter and the limitations of that mode of communication. I don't believe he's being literal here. I believe what he's saying is just make sure that what you say is what you really want to say, what you really need to say, what is essential to say, what conveys the true message of how you are feeling and thinking right now. Keep your words few is a relative thing, because keeping your words few, well, for someone who's very talkative, 1,500 words might be few words. But for somebody who doesn't like to talk much, maybe 15 words is few words. So whatever is few words for you, keep your words few before God. Here's a couple of things to think about as far as impulsively bringing up things up before God. Three bullet points along this along these lines. If a troubling situation in your life isn't turning out how you expect or how you want it to turn out, it's not an indication that God has lost control or forgotten about you. It would be impulsive, rather, in your prayers to immediately castigate God for some perceived failure. And I think that's one of the things that he's talking about here is in your prayers, watch out for saying things like, "Why, God? How could you, God? Why would you let this, God?" Those are impulsive thoughts because God might just be saying, if you had just waited a day, you'd see how it was going to turn out. If you would just be a little bit patient, you wouldn't need to be blaming me for things that I'm doing right now to help you. A little bit of patience, a little less impulsive will go a long way. Second bullet point, I'm always very careful to respect the mystery surrounding God's activities. I don't know exactly how it is that God operates in my life. I don't know exactly what God is doing. So I allow God to be a little bit mysterious, if not a lot bit mysterious, in how he does things. Often with the best of intentions, we attribute something to God when it might be mere coincidence. And then we blame God for something when in fact he's trying to bring about something good in the long run. I don't know how God operates in my life. So I give him credit for everything and say, God, I'll let you be God and I'll simply be Ryan. But the third thing is, perhaps it was for these kinds of impulsive thoughts that several Bible writers spoke of the dangers of presumption. Go to Proverbs 13 and verse 10, for example. In Proverbs 13, verse 10, it says, through presumption comes nothing but strife, but with those who receive counsel is wisdom. Or speaking presumptuously in name of God in Deuteronomy chapter 18, verses 20 through 22, speaking of the prophet. The prophet who speaks in my name false prophecies, just wait and see what happens to him. Just wait and see. Now, he says something very interesting here in verse 3 as we move on through Ecclesiastes 5. For the dream comes through much effort. I wonder what that means. One writer put it really well when he said that the more likely explanation would be, or the more likely interpretation of that would be, that the dream comes as a consequence of too much effort. Or the dream comes as a consequence of too much busyness. I like the way that that's put. When your life is really busy and you're stressed out about things and you have a lot of stuff on your mind, that's when you have the strangest dreams, isn't it? When your mind is at ease, though, and you're confident and you're comfortable and you trust, that's when you sleep really well at night. But when you're too busy with your work, or when you worry too much about stuff that's out of your control, or when you're too fixated on some kind of earthly activity, a hobby or a sports team, and you get stressed because your team loses or someone gets injured and you wonder what's going to happen next week, it's when you get fixated on the things of life and all of your energy goes toward those things that you have really strange dreams at night. Is anybody like me? Do you have strange dreams even as an adult? I thought I'd grow out of that, but I find my dreams get stranger as I'm getting older because I'm better at remembering them, which is not a good thing. A lot of dreams I don't want to remember. They're not always bad dreams. They're just strange dreams. But I think he's talking about the dream comes through a life that's full of too much effort. Sleepless nights, occupied thinking, that will ruin a person's life. When a man concerns himself too much with the distractions of his life, it is disturbing dreams that will leave his sleep unsettled. So the connection he makes then is, and the voice of a fool comes through many words. We get back to words now, okay? The whole purpose of this verse is to show why we need to keep our words few. This is an explanation. Why we need to keep our words few. Too many pointless and vain words in prayer, too many pointless and vain words in our conversations, too many pointless and vain words in a sermon or a Bible class or in any other interaction, too many pointless and vain words leave our prayer lives unsettled. And it leaves us unsatisfied in our prayer lives and in our spiritual lives. In the same way that too much anxiety disrupts a healthy sleep pattern, too many words disrupt a healthy prayer pattern. The more words we say, the more likely it is that we'll say something upsetting or selfish in our prayers. I like Proverbs 10 and verse 19 on this point. Proverbs 10 verse 19 says, "When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable, but he who restrains his lips is wise." Good advice for preachers, I suppose. Good advice for everybody. Verses 4 and 5 back in our text. "When you make a vow to God, do not be late in paying it, for he takes no delight in fools." That's a hard line stand to take right there, by the way. You notice that God doesn't have a sense of humor about fools. And we use the word fool now in a much more jovial way than they did when Proverbs was written, or when Jesus talks about the fool in Matthew chapter 5, and how the one who calls his brother fool is going to be guilty of eternal hellfire. We use the word fool in a much more friendly, jovial, silly way. But notice that God doesn't have a sense of humor when it comes to fools. He doesn't throw that term around lightly like we do. He takes no delight in fools. Fools aren't funny. Fools aren't useful. He takes no delight in them. So he says emphatically, pay what you vow. And it would be better that you should not vow at all than that you should vow and not pay. Or as Jesus put it in Matthew 5, verse 37, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Or as James says in James 5 and verse 12, but above all, my brethren, do not swear, whether by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under judgment. That's the same kind of severe language that's used by Jesus, that's used by Solomon. There's a severity to making false promises that we also need to understand. Now, we make a lot of promises in life, but we don't always keep all of our promises, unfortunately. We say, I'll be there at 5, and we end up being there at 5:15. Maybe that's a little thing, isn't it? But is that part of a greater pattern of failing to keep promises? We say, I'll help you out whenever you need it, but we really aren't going to be there for that person. Give me a call if you ever need anything. And someone calls us and says, well, I'm too busy right that for now. We make all kinds of promises that we don't keep. And in our prayers, it's the same way. The soldier in the foxhole with bombs exploding all around him. God, if you get me out of this pickle right now, I'll do this, this, and this. I'll do anything you want. It's interesting, isn't it? God, I'll do anything you want. And Jesus says, he who believes and is baptized will be saved. How about that? No, I don't really think I'm going to do that. We make all kinds of promises when it comes to evangelism also. Every year we have a goals presentation that our elders present. They offer goals that we need to work on as a congregation. That's a good time of year to work on that. But we throw out goals for ourselves as well. This year, I'm finally going to do all those Bible studies I need to do. I'm going to talk to my neighbor, God. I'm going to get 10 Bible studies going with people this year. And by February, we've done 3 and we kind of peter out, don't we? Weight loss goals, exercise goals, New Year's resolutions of all kinds. It would be better not to make any promises at all than to make promises and not keep them. Promising that you'll be at your son's soccer game, then you don't show up. What would have hurt your son more? Just being honest and saying, I can't make it this time. Or saying you would be there and not showing up at all. And if it hurts a little boy's feelings that his dad doesn't show up to a soccer game, how much does it hurt God's feelings, the Father of us all, when we make big promises and we don't follow through with them either? And I can think back on my own life of the great promises that I have failed to keep. For me, sins that I've committed. When I've told God in prayer, that's it, that's the last time. God, I'm never doing it again. This is the last time I'm going to ask for forgiveness for that sin because I'm not going to do it again. Then we find ourselves doing it again.
We make the same mistake because we're around the same people, doing the same things, allowing the same garbage into our lives. Promises that we break. Promises that we break.
Pay what you vow. What an emphatic statement. And I love the way the writer emphasizes it so much, as if he has had personal experience with this problem. As if Solomon himself knows exactly what it's like to have people late in their payments. People who will not keep their promises to him. Maybe if we want to understand a little bit of how God feels when we fail to keep our promises, think about all the experiences you've had when people have failed you somehow. When you didn't have people who were there for you, who said that they would be. When you had people who owed you something and they returned it to you in worse condition than when you gave it. A lawnmower, a piece of furniture, whatever it is. Think about the times that you've been hurt by somebody else. By a spouse, maybe? Now you start to understand a little bit more, on a very small scale, but a little bit more of how it makes God feel. A good example of this is the parable that was read earlier in our worship service in Matthew chapter 21. Notice the way that this parable plays out, as Jesus says here in Matthew 21, verse 28. But what do you think? A man had two sons, and he came to the first and said, "Son, go work today in the vineyard." And he answered and said, "I will, sir." And he did not go. Now he came to the second and said the same thing, but he answered and said, "I will not." Yet afterward he regretted it, and he went and worked. Which of the two did the will of his father? Now, which of the two promised to do the will of his father? Which of the two ended up doing the will of his father after he realized, with a lot of regret, the disrespect that he showed to his dad? The second son was the one who obeyed. Even though at first he didn't, he did. He knew he was obligated. Maybe not verbally obligated, but he knew he was obligated to God. So we need to be very careful. Which of these two sons are we? Which of the two sons ended up being obedient? Now we end here in verse 6. Don't let your speech cause you to sin. Do not say in the presence of the messenger of God that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry on account of your voice and destroy the work of your hands? He says, do not let. Do not let means that it's up to you. Do not let means that it was your responsibility. Do not let means that you're the one who's in charge of the faucet of words coming out of your mouth. And all you have to do is turn the spigot. Turn it off and start thinking a little bit more before you speak and before you act. Do not let, and do not let speech cause you to sin. Do not let that be the thing that destroys you. You're in control. Now, I know that James says in James chapter 3 that our words are, they're so destructive. They're so out of control that we allow our words to run our lives like a rudder runs a ship. I get that. I understand that. But even with that being acknowledged as an incredible difficulty, it still is our control. It still is our choice. And don't say in the presence of the messenger of God that it was a mistake. Don't go back on your words and say, "I probably shouldn't have made such big promises." Who are we kidding? We all knew I wasn't going to keep those promises anyway. Let's keep the bar set really, really low for me, why don't we? Is that what you want? Is that what you want? To keep the bar set low for yourself? Now, I don't believe that Ecclesiastes 5 is saying we shouldn't pray, or that we shouldn't make promises to God, or that we shouldn't vow things. That's not the point that he's getting at. What Solomon is trying to illustrate is that we have to be careful with these things, diligent with these things, work hard with these things. Your prayer means something, and it's valuable to God, and it's valuable to you. Your words mean something, and they're valuable. Don't throw them around like garbage. Don't throw them around like taco coupons after a basketball game. They mean something. And don't let your life be destroyed by them. Why should God be angry on account of your voice and destroy the work of your hands? When it was up to you to decide that, and up to you to control it, to stop it, to manage it, and to say the right things. This is a great short little passage on how we pray and how we talk and how we make promises. I hope that you feel like it was really practical. Right now you have an opportunity to become a Christian, to make the ultimate promise to God, because being baptized isn't just something to make you feel better. Being baptized isn't just something that's meant to make you feel a little less guilty about the things that you've done bad lately. No, when you say that I believe that Jesus is the Son of God, and I'm ready to put that life of sin behind me, when you get baptized into the body of Christ, that is an initiation into the kingdom of heaven. It is your citizenship. And that comes with responsibility and commitment. Are you willing to promise to God, to commit to God, your life, your very being? Every day is His, every word is His, your life is His. Can you make that? And if you're ready, then do it now. Stop waiting and stop delaying. Whatever need you might have of a spiritual nature, please let it be known by coming forward as we stand and sing.